Doom do 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 do. Hi, plan friends. Welcome to episode 89 of
Blue Mango Radio.
Plan friends, I'm going to start this episode off with a huge announcement for you. I have finally birthed, it's been my quarantine baby, the Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test, what I'm calling the triple P. Now, plan friends, I have been wanting to make this for you for over 6 months, maybe even a year. I've lost track. It's been on my list of to-dos every month while I was on the road with cats, but I just didn't have the bandwidth to get it done. And because I've been quarantined for 20 days, I finally have been able to build it out. And now I'm bringing it to you. So the Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test is a very short quiz that assesses your personality as a plant parent and then gives you curated recommendations for the plants that you should try in your home, the projects, planty projects for you to do in your home, especially if you're isolating still, and podcast resources for you. So I created the quiz because people ask me a lot, like, what's the best basic houseplant to have? And I really don't think there is one standard houseplant for everyone. I think that you have to choose plants that work for your personality. If you want to water your plants every day, you're not going to do well with a Sansevieria. If you're watering a Sansevieria every day, but just like if you travel so much and you need to be able to water your plants once every 2 weeks. If you travel for work a lot, you can't have a fern in your apartment. So I think you have to distill what your plant parent personality is. And I have profiled 5 different personalities from sourcing you guys. And just the more I interact with you guys, the more I kind of get to know our community. I've kind of broken down what I see our community into 5 different personalities. And then you take this test. And like I said, you take the test, you give your email, and then you get a curated list. So each plant parent personality is paired with a Molly Mansfield print of a certain plant. So you get a cute little banner, your name, your painting of a plant, and then suggestions. So it talks about your strengths, it talks about your weaknesses, and then gives suggestions for plants that you might want to try in your space that are going to be conducive to your personality. Different projects that I've done in my home or things that I've seen that you might be able to dive into. And like I said, different podcast episodes. And plant friends, this is my 89th podcast. I know a lot of you have binged the whole thing, but I really thought this was also a fun way for me to curate listening for you guys, especially if you are newer to the podcast and you haven't binged everything and 80 episodes is overwhelming for you to try and listen to. This is a curated list of podcasts for you to try and binge while you're hanging out. And they're specifically paired for what I think you might need because of your personality. So I'm super proud of it. I would love for you to take it. It's at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality, and it's linked in the show notes. And if you take it, I would love to see you posting on Instagram, screenshot what your personality is and post it on Instagram and tag me, because I will be reposting all of your posts about the personality test. And let's just like get this personality test out there. And I just think it's going to be a really helpful resource to people, especially people who might be starting out. So I hope you join me in your enthusiasm for the test, and I can't wait to hear what you think. That being said, I'm also very enthusiastic about today's episode. If you listen to last week's episode, there's a huge movement for people to grow their own foods in reaction to this pandemic. And also, it's spring and people like to grow their own food in the spring and summer anyway, like me. So I had Toby from the New York Botanical Garden, he's head of the Edible Academy, join us to do the fundamentals of vegetable gardening. So this is supposed to inspire and help people who are in their first couple of years of vegetable gardening, knowing the basics. I was inspired to do this episode because I just took the Fundamentals of Gardening course at the New York Botanical Garden. The New York Botanical Garden has so many unbelievable courses that you can take. You used to be able to take them in person. Now, since we are isolated, they have actually put most of their courses online. And I took Fundamentals of Gardening in person. Then we got quarantined. I'm currently taking soil science class. Plant friends, if you follow me on Instagram, you see I'm obsessed. I'm learning so much about soil. I'm learning so much about drainage. I can't wait to share what I've learned with you because I'm going to interview my teacher after the course is over. It's just an amazing resource. And while we are isolated, what better way to use your time than empower yourself and learn a little bit more? That's at least what I'm doing. I'm definitely on one side of the extreme where I'm taking like probably too many courses, but I'm having a lot of fun doing it. So I wanted to give you guys a heads up. I am going to start taking the Introduction to Plant Science course at the end of the month, if any of you guys want to join me. So the Intro to Plant Science, it starts at the end of April and it'll be linked in the show notes. I think it would be really fun if we all like learned alongside of each other. It'll be my third course and I can't say enough about how much I love what they're doing. And I really appreciate that they pivoted so quickly and put so many of their courses online. And if you get inspired by this episode, they have a bunch of vegetable gardening geared online courses. They have rooftop gardening, mastering the art of tomato gardening, vegetable gardening, and small space veggie gardening, also available virtually. So click the link in the show notes and check them out. I hope that this episode inspires you to try growing something edible this season. I mean, herbs were really my gateway plant into my houseplant collection. We started with herbs on our balcony, and when those started thriving, I decided to try houseplants again. And I got to tell you, plant friends, cutting chives every morning and scrambling them into our eggs, and Billy makes the most unbelievable walnut pesto with our basil, and growing a tomato from seed to fruit, or at least just watching a tomato flower and ripen into a fruit, it's an amazing experience. And if you have the space, you should try it. And if you are indoors, there's also a lot of stuff you can do with grow lights indoors. So consider it, and I hope that this is a great fundamental foundational episode for you. And if you want more episodes on edible gardening, let me know on Instagram or by email. Quick thank you to our newest Patreon supporters. I am so moved that you guys continue to show up for me as a Patreon plant friend. Janae Leisinger, Bonnie Volkert, Hannah Merrill, and Amelia McKeithen. Thank you for joining our community of plant friends. We're having so much fun in our weekly Zoom calls, which will be happening throughout this period of isolation. But the Patreon plant friends are a community of people who are financially supporting Bloom and Grow on a monthly basis to help me get this episode to as many people as possible. I need you guys now more than ever just because of the landscape, and sponsorships aren't as available, and I want to keep getting content out to you guys. I actually want to keep doing more content now than ever because I know people are home and need stuff to do. So thank you for our sweet community who is supporting me. I love you and I'm thankful to you. Before we dive into this episode that I love, I want to tell you about our first sponsor of the day that I love, Modern Sprout. Plant friends, Modern Sprout is back sponsoring Bloom and Grow Radio. You know that I love them and I have their grow lights installed in my apartment, their grow bar and their grow house. And I love their hydroponic herb planters and all of their amazing accessories for planty people. But they are back with new and improved amazing products for 2020. Because they are committed to making simple, stylish, and sustainable green thumb solutions for every home, no matter what size your home is, no matter what your lighting situation is. So you've heard me talk about the grow lights that I already have in my house, and I am so excited. I just got a box of their new grow lights delivered to my door, so we're adding two more grow lights to my collection, but they have come out with their smart grow lights. So they now have a smart grow bar and a smart grow house. So not only are these new models twice as strong as their older ones, so that's 4,000 lumens, but they now sync with the Modern Sprout app. So there's a Modern Sprout app. You sync it with these smart lights, and it has customizable programming for the light. So you can select what type of light scenario you want, if you want partial shade, partial sun, or full light, and then you can fully customize your lighting schedule from your app. How high-tech and brainy is that? I'm so impressed with them. They're such cool products, and I feel like it would be especially helpful for those who travel a lot and might need to manage it remotely. So like I said, it's 4,000 lumens of natural white light. They are rated for 25,000 hours of usage, and they're eco-friendly, and they will not stress your power bill. Also, just in time for the gift season, as we have Mother's Day rolling around and some other holidays, they've launched an adorable new line of seed starter kits. So they've got cherry tomatoes, sunflowers, wildflowers, and their new philanthropic tree kit line. So in the tree starter kits, for every kit that they sell, they make a donation to plant a tree. Any of their seed starter kits would make great gifts, and they're a great way to get kids involved with learning about plants as well. They even have these really cute seed lollipops, which are super cute, like seed bottles. bombs, but they're in lollipop form and they're made to be planted in the ground or in containers. They come in either pollinator or culinary varieties, and they're decorated and they're packaged adorably. They would be perfect. You could get a 3-pack and send them to friends or family to celebrate spring or Mother's Day. They would also make adorable party favors or really fun ways to get your kids involved in the planting season. I'm also obsessed with so many of their accessories. My latest obsession have been their snippers. They have really nice ergonomic plant snippers, clippers, whatever you want to call them. And I've really been enjoying them in this beautiful mint green color. But they truly have a planty accessory planter grow light for everyone at every price because they are committed to connecting people to plants. So whether you're interested in nutritious, fragrant herbs and greens to grow in your kitchen or soul-soothing aromatherapy in your bed or in your bath, they have these adorable candles that are planters. They're called Glow and Grow, and you burn the candle down and then it's this adorable planter in really nice scents. So they've got something for everyone. Go to modsprout.com and check out their amazing assortment of all of their offerings. They've got so many giftable options for Mother's Day and the upcoming holidays. So head to modsprout.com and use code 15BLOOM at checkout for 15% off. So once again, that's code 15BLOOM at modsprout.com for 15% off. So before we dive into my interview with Toby from the Edible Garden Academy, which you will learn more about in our conversation, so I took Fundamentals of Gardening with the New York Botanical Garden in person, and Plant Friends, it just like blew my mind. The thing that I'm loving about all of these courses that I'm taking is I feel like for the last 3 years, I've interviewed people and I've looked on the internet and I've been told certain practices, but I haven't necessarily understood the why. I just know that you're supposed to break up the roots before you repot a plant, but I've never really understood why. And a lot of simple things like that. I've understood that you need quick draining soil, but I haven't understood why. And these courses are really helping me figure that out. So I thought that it would be fun for me to give you an overview of like the main takeaways that I had from my Fundamentals of Gardening class. So number one, the biggest like mind-blowing thing that I still wrap my head around is that soil is made up of 25% air, 25% water, 45% mineral particles, and 5% organic matter. So soil is 50% air and water. Just take a minute to think about that, because when you think about how we say how important it is to have highly aerated soil, obviously it needs to be aerated if it's supposed to be 25% air, and watering is so important because soil is 25% water. So if you're throwing those ratios off, you can really be setting your plant up for failure. So that's just something that I've really been ruminating on lately. Another thing we learned is that plant nutrients are broken up into macro and micronutrients. And when it gets too sciencey, I kind of glaze over. But my big takeaway is that there are three macronutrients that we need to really concern ourselves with. And that's nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, NPK. So NPK is what you hear about all the time when it comes to fertilizing and like the different levels and different ratios. But NPK comes from that 5% of the organic matter in the soil. If you go back to soil is 5% organic matter, 45% mineral particles, and then 50% water and air. So NPK stands for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And those are the letters that you always see on your fertilizers. We also discussed basic garden design principles, which I thought was really fun and I actually applied. They taught us how to draw a scale version of our garden, and I drew one for my tiny balcony garden, which I'll go into in a different episode. But basically, in any garden bed, something that I learned was the tallest plant should be half of the width of your garden bed. So if your garden bed is 6 feet wide, the tallest plant in it should only be 3 feet tall. And that's just a proportion that I've never thought about or understood. And then also put your tallest plants in the back of your bed because you don't want to stick a tall plant in the front of your bed and then cast a shadow on the rest of the plants in the garden. So you have to assess where that sun is coming from and then putting your tallest plants the farthest away, if that makes sense. And then if you have an island bed, you put the tallest plants in the middle. And then another fun word, a specimen plant is the name that you use for the focal point of the garden. So if you put like a cherry tree or, you know, some beautiful big plant that's like the center of the garden, that's a specimen plant, which I thought was very interesting. And then the other thing I wanted to define is annuals and perennials, because this is something that always confuses me because I think the text is a little misleading. So a great garden bed has a mix of evergreens, perennials, and annuals. Annuals are planted once a year and they normally die that year. So annual, so just like one annual, 1 year. But they have longer lasting blooms and longer lasting color in the garden. So a funny term that they said to me was there's three types of plants for arranging in containers. Thrillers, the one that goes in the middle of the planter. Fillers, the one that goes around the thriller. And then spillers, which are the ones that like tumble over the container. And I just thought that was kind of fun. Perennials are like my strawberries, which come back every year. So like basil would be an annual. I plant it for a season and I harvest it. And then I plant it again the following year. It doesn't come back, but my strawberries come back. So they're a perennial. So I just wanted to give you those definitions because I feel like I always get confused with them. Another compare and contrast is compost versus mulch. Compost is the decaying organic matter that is used to fertilize plants. So compost is part of the organic matter that makes that 5% in the soil ratio that we talked about. Mulch is what you put on top of a bed. So after you plant your plants in your outdoor garden, you're often going to mulch your plants, which is putting mulch on top of them. And that helps with water preservation. It helps with temperature control, and mulch helps preventing weeds. Mulch will, I think, ultimately turn into compost and organic matter, but it starts out as mulch. Another quote I loved is my teacher always used to say, roots are made to be broken. So scoring roots, which is the act what we do as plant parents when we repot plants, is like shaking the roots free at the bottom to get them out of those concentric circles. That's actually super important because the roots will still grow in concentric circles if you don't break them up. And when you score the roots or break them, it actually instigates those roots to grow more. So don't be scared of that. And then I just also wanted to give you a list of spring garden tasks that he went over because it's spring. So if you have an outdoor garden, you can clean up your winter debris. You can divide your perennials. You can transplant perennials and shrubs that you've divided. You can top dress plants with compost. You can prune while the leaves are off the plants. And he suggests pruning while the leaves are off the plants because you can have a better idea of seeing the plant and not be stuck looking through those leaves. And you can also like do any garden chores, like fix your broken landscape features like fences or trellises. So anyway, that's an overview of my fundamentals of gardening class that I took. And now we're going to have an amazing conversation with Toby, the director of the Edible Garden Academy at the New York Botanical Garden, for his fundamentals of vegetable gardening, because I know we are all ready to grow some edibles for our kitchens this year. Hi, Toby. Welcome to the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm so excited to have you because I'm on day 18 as we record of isolation, or 19, and I have been like dreaming about my balcony vegetable garden. It's been the only thing keeping me sane. So I can't wait to learn a little bit more from you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the Edible Academy at NYBG and what you do for them.
So the Edible Academy is a garden-based education campus within the botanical garden. And so we host a variety of different program formats to introduce students, teachers, families to vegetable gardening, to growing plants that you can eat. And some of the programs that we host, we've actually have been offering for over 60 years. Some are brand new formats that we introduced with this new campus. So the Edible Academy opened up in June of 2018.
That's amazing. I've been to the grounds at NYBG and it's just so sweet to see all the different garden beds that the kids have, their little signs and their little like watering cans that you give them and stuff. It's so sweet.
Yeah, it's a really special program to be a part of. And the new campus, we're now open year round. We're able to double the number of participants in our programs. And so we see over 100,000 visitors per year.
Oh my gosh. And in terms of the kids who you're educating on a consistent basis, where do they come from? Is it public schools in the area or is it more school trips?
Yeah, we have a variety of different school programs, gardening workshops. And so most of the participants on an average year are from relatively close to the Botanical Garden and are, you know, New York City public school students. And so we have a partner program with the gift from the New York City Council that we've offered for the past 2 years. And so those are students basically outside of the gardens, just outside of our grounds. And they come for 5 visits during the school year and dedicated educators, and then get to see the garden change over that time. And you know, we're hopeful to continue that program many years to come.
That's so amazing. I feel like, especially right now in this weird moment of isolation, people are realizing, at least my generation and the generations below me are realizing, like, how disconnected from our food chain we are. And like, so many people do not understand how an eggplant is grown, or even just simple herbs. Like, people don't really know. Like, some people think herbs come from like the plastic packages that we buy the snipped versions of in the grocery store. So I feel like this season, there's no better time to try and like empower yourself and just learn a little bit more and get a little bit more connected to what you're eating and start them young at the Edible Academy.
Yes. And then that notion is amplified several fold for folks that live in such a densely populated place. There's very limited places to grow plants. And so that disconnect is definitely there. We notice it. And so we have garden beds with and trowels, and one of our stations, one of our perennial stations, is just a digging station. Just give kids a chance to dig in the soil, you know, touch it and see what it feels like, and then maybe find some of the decomposers that might be living there.
Yeah, we all know there's no better feeling than dirt under your fingernails and, you know, good hours spent at the garden. So my mind has been blown with these New York Botanical Garden classes I've been taking. One was the fundamentals of gardening, which is kind of what inspired this episode. And so I was thinking, because it's the season, we could kind of talk about the fundamentals of vegetable gardening and for those who maybe have not done it before. So what are the basic fundamentals that a young gardener might need to know? I think too, with our audience, we have listeners who only have a sunny windowsill to grow on, but for that, they can go listen to, I have a separate episode on windowsill gardening. I have probably 6 to 8 square feet of a tiny balcony garden that I garden on. We're going to have people who have larger patios or larger balconies in New York City or dense areas. And then some people who have maybe space for a garden bed or to actually plant in the ground. But no matter what you're planting in, I feel like there are some fundamentals that we can learn. So what would you say those are?
That's right. You know, you can grow plants in spaces big and small. And so having said that, there are still some basic needs of plants that you need to accommodate. But before that, I usually start with just thinking about the gardener themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that you can grow plants for a variety of different reasons. If you want to have some flowers, you can grow flowers. You want to have house plants, you can have house plants. If you want to grow vegetable, you know, food that you can eat, plants that you can eat, then you have to make those decisions. And so one of the hardest things is when you open up like a seed catalog, and mm-hmm. Some of the companies sell seeds of all those types, flowers, vegetables, and herbs. And so it's really hard to just kind of grow everything, especially if, as a beginner. You just want to start with a few things and try it out. And once you've done that, usually you get really interested in it. You want to do it again. And then you want to try to challenge yourself each year. So think about what you like to eat, let's say, if you're growing vegetables, and then make a list of those plants. And from there, then you start thinking about the plants themselves and what they need. And you're going to have kind of a reckoning in which you realize that some of the things that you like to eat, you might not be able to grow where you live. Or
okay,
considering the circumstances that you have, small balconies, small pots, large outdoor space, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the first thing is figuring out what you might be interested to grow, which would keep you going back to your watering schedule. And then the second is figuring out what you can grow. Those are two separate questions you have to figure out. So how do you figure out what you can grow?
So the seed catalogs, or actually even the seed packets themselves, you might not have yourself a catalog in front of you. A lot of them are online now. Almost all of them are online. So you can flip through, you know, the needs of the plants are usually listed on the back of the seed packet or in the introductory section to that type of plant. Mm-hmm. But just in general, if you're growing in, let's say, New York City metropolitan area, like the Northeast United States, there's seasons. And so there's a spring and a fall are referred to as like cool weather seasons. And so there's groups of plants that do well in cool weather, warm days, but colder nights. Then there's like warm season crops. And so if you go back to that kind of wish list, and you would see which plants do better at which time. Mm-hmm. And then there's like space requirements. Some plants require more space than others. Some are petite and you can plant many in a small space. Others start small, but get very big. And so you want to learn about the plants that you are on your wish list and how much space they require. But one thing that almost all vegetables need a lot of is sunlight. Ideally, they'll grow better with as much sun as possible. A minimum of 6 hours is kind of a rule of thumb. And then most plants are going to need to be watered, but they don't want to sit in water. So you're going to have some sort of a soil medium, depending on where you're growing. And then you want to make sure that that's well draining. Again, that's almost all for almost every plant. And so lots of sun, the ideal. Mm-hmm. Access to be able to water those plants, and then identify plants you can grow in the spring and then other plants you can grow in the summer.
Before we dive into more details about that, can you just talk briefly about hardiness zones? Because I feel like that's something that like people will say, oh yeah, I live here, you know, 13 zone, whatever. And I always kind of glaze over, but figuring out your zone is probably also a really helpful way to figure out what you can grow and when.
Yeah. So like the zones, the USDA puts those together and they change them periodically based on meteorological data. So we've been recording in more detailed ways more recently, but there's a historical record of the typical climate in your area. And that's definitely changing in recent years. And so those zones are being redrawn. Mm-hmm. But for all intents and purposes, it's basically identifying the average frost dates. And
okay. So some plants, which you see on every seed packet, it's like, so 1 week after the last projected frost or 2 weeks before or like whatever it is, but the frost is always talked about and I never really know what it is.
There's like a light frost and then there's a hard frost. And so again, when you're gardening or trying it out for the first time, you'll start to pay attention to the weather forecast more.
Yeah.
You kind of think a little bit more ahead, either in the next couple of days, whether like you want to grow outside and garden in a rainy day or not, or mostly kind of keeping an eye out for the conditions so that you don't damage all of that hard work that you've put into growing the plants that you have started.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a frost in the end of the winter. And there's also a frost at the beginning of the winter. So there's a spring frost date and there's a fall frost date. And they vary. Even there's a pretty broad span, even just in the tri-state area. The areas closer to the coast are buffered a little bit by being close to the coast. And then areas kind of inner and higher elevations have more of a drastic kind of change. And so they're back to the plants. There are plants that won't survive frost. They're tender.
Yeah.
And so you'll have things like basil. Like you'll walk in and you'll know there was a frost. It'll all be brown and dead.
Yeah. Basil is a great teacher plant because it's so reactive, I feel like, to whether it's been watered or whether it's been in too much sun or heat or anything. I feel like basil was a really good teacher for me, my first herb garden.
Another, for a lot of beginners, they get excited and they start to grow plants indoors and then transition them outdoors. Mm-hmm. That process of acclimating plants from the indoor conditions that you provide to the reality of the outdoor conditions, it's called hardening off. And so it's particularly tricky for beginners. Folks who have been doing it a long time kind of don't think twice about it, but the conditions outdoors with wind, with direct sunlight that's not tempered by glass, even in the best conditions, much colder temperatures potentially at night than a household, like an apartment or something that you're maintaining consistent temperatures is shocking to a plant. And so there's different kind of ways that gardeners get them used to being outdoors. You might put them out on a nice day, which is not nearly as nice as it might be in your indoor environment. Right. But that little bit of breeze knocking them around stresses them out a little bit. It helps them to be a little tougher so that when they're just out for 24 hours a day in the ground, they'll withstand that change.
Right. Hardening them off, right? That's what it's called. And if people want to learn much more in depth about hardening off, I have a whole episode on how to start tomatoes from seed and get them in the ground. And we have a tomato guy walk us through the whole process, but it's pretty similar. It's basically seed starting 101. And speaking of tomatoes, something else that you said, understanding the space that the plants need. My first year, I started like so many tomato seeds. And then I realized that a tomato plant needs a full 12 inches, like it needs a full amount of space. I thought I could put a couple of tomato plants in one container and then realize that it's one plant per container because of how the root system. So then I ended up having like all these tomato plants that I couldn't even really end up growing because I have such little space. I can have two containers that are big enough for tomatoes. So yeah, feeling the pain on understanding space. So figure out what you want to grow, figure out where you're going to grow it, figure out where you are. So figure out your hardiness zone and where you are to pair the want and the can together. So you said for sun, you need minimum 6 hours, right? Ideally 8 hours of direct sun.
But yeah, the more the better. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily for the gardener. So you got to wear like sunscreen, right, and hat, long sleeves and things like that. But for the plants, yeah, they'll grow better with sun. So you want to try to identify how much sunlight you get in a day on the location that you're going to grow. So if you still have yet to, let's say, build a bed in your backyard or not deciding whether you want to put it on like your front stoop or your back porch, you want to pay attention in the days before you decide on which location gets the most sunlight. And so at minimum six, if you get six, you should be good enough.
Do you have any tricks or suggestions for how to assess your space for sunlight? Is it just walking out in your front yard and checking every hour and seeing, you know, writing it down, like logging how many hours of full sun different spaces are getting?
Yeah, I think it can be done just the old fashioned way, just going out and standing in the spot or the spots that you think, and yeah, keeping a little piece of note paper. Mm-hmm. Be wary if you're doing it in the wintertime and you have some trees mm-hmm. nearby that usually most trees don't have leaves on their branches this time of year. They're just now starting to bud out. And so that those branches are actually a full canopy of leaves that will cast shade. And so you want to see if you can kind of tell if the light's coming between the branches there or not at the points of the day. So,
okay. Because the trees don't necessarily have the leaves on them yet. Okay.
So you might get fooled like this is a great spot. And then a couple months later, or a couple of weeks later,
that's like a full shade because the leaves have grown in.
Right.
Okay. Oh, that's a hot tip.
Yeah. So, you know, if your building is nearby, you can kind of guess, but you want to orient yourselves east and west. And then even north and south, the sun in the winter is a little lower in the sky into the southern mm-hmm. and then rises up a little bit more until like the summer solstice. So in mid-June, and then again, starts making its way a little further in the sky. So you might not think it's in the sun more if you're doing that assessment in the winter, whereas like by spring and then the peak right. is where it actually is.
And for house plants, the rule of thumb is southern is the brightest, northern is the least brightest, east is a little, and then west is a little bit brighter or warmer than east. Is it the same with just normal gardening?
Since we're in the northern hemisphere and north of the Tropic of Cancer, the sun's going to always just be a little to the south a little bit. So if you're right. in an apartment building and you're gardening on a terrace that's facing north, you'll never have direct sunlight, maybe right. early in the morning and again in the evening during the sunrise and sunset.
Okay.
So
same rules.
Basically, yeah.
All right. So that's sun. So sun and then soil you mentioned. So let's talk more about soil. The big thing in the fundamentals of gardening class I learned is don't you dare put garden soil, like outdoor soil, in a container, because drainage is a big thing. And I'm taking a soil science class now and learning a lot. But what are your recommendations for vegetable gardening, growing edible plants? What kind of soil should we be putting them in?
Yeah, so typically like seed starting mixes or potting soils mm-hmm. tend not to have any organic matter. And it's usually just sphagnum moss, pulverized sphagnum moss, and some sort of like a material to aid with drainage. And so I would not necessarily recommend growing vegetables exclusively in a potting mix like that. So I'd mostly grow outdoors, and we typically mix, it's a blend of compost and topsoil. Mm-hmm. So the nutrients and macronutrients are largely coming from the compost, and the minerals are being supplied through the topsoil. And so
where do you get your compost from?
Well, we make our own.
Oh, okay.
Here at the Edible Academy, and then the Botanical Garden also makes compost. And, you know, there are different types of compost depending on what the inputs are. And so some composts are a little bit more of a fungal variety. They're generated from like tree debris, like wood chips and branches and leaves. And then a more like bacterial-based compost is typically generated from more like of a food waste compost. Mm-hmm. And so here at the Edible Academy, we have a smaller scale compost space that we share with our visitors and teach them, and they help to maintain. And so that's mostly a food waste. And we'll work in a little bit of branches and twigs and things to aid with aeration. The larger campus, when we make compost, it's more of a tree-based compost, so more of a fungal-based. So we get actually both. We're able to get some from our compost facility at the garden and then from our own compost piles. We also order some in. There's a Macro Organic Farm. Millerton, New York is a trusted source. So they make organic compost and screen it. And they bag it. So you can see their products in hardware stores, nurseries, and things like that.
My mom goes to the local dump and brings a bunch of trash bags, and the dump makes compost, like churns it and makes it, and she gets it for free. Like she just brings a bunch of trash bags and they load her up with the compost, and then she takes it back and puts it all over her soil. Sure.
A lot of municipalities and towns in the tri-state area, you know, Westchester and Bergen County in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Even up into Connecticut. Yeah, they help with clearing parks, and some have organic like food waste recycling programs. And so they oftentimes will accept donations of compost to make that compost. And then they'll also oftentimes give it away.
Mm-hmm. You know, in thinking of discussing soil, why don't we dial back for a minute and talk about the benefits and the pluses and minuses for container gardening versus gardening in the ground? Because a lot of us are going to be gardening in containers on balconies, but some people are going to try and garden in their lawns. And I would imagine, you know, there's sides to both story there.
Yeah, just to like wrap up and kind of transition into this conversation, whatever soil like you end up with, just want to make sure that there's good drainage. Mm-hmm. So there's water holding qualities, but it's the plants, the roots won't be sitting in water. They're
right.
Deprived of oxygen. So that applies to both in-ground bed that may be framed in lumber or stone, or it would apply to a container like a wooden container, a terracotta pot, so on and so forth. As far as the pros to in-ground gardening, is usually more space available, and mm-hmm. so you can grow more. And for cons, like you inherit like the soil that you have, and then you can import soil and you can manipulate that, but you do have to work with what you have, and unless you like build that raised bed, then you can create your own conditions. For the pots, I'd have to say it's just a smaller volume of planting medium, and so they tend to dry out quicker, mm-hmm. and then it's typically less nutrients, less minerals available, and so you have to fertilize more often. And then I guess the only other con is that they're smaller, so you have limited space. You have to make harder decisions on what to grow.
I know. I'm making those tough decisions now. Do you recommend a soil test for people who are going to try using the soil in their homes?
Absolutely. Yeah, whenever you're gardening and particularly either putting your hands in it or like ingesting the plants that you grow in it, mm-hmm. eating them, I think you should learn what the existing soil conditions are. And so you just basically take samples and usually from a few different locations, a few different depths, and then send them into private companies that will do an analysis of the soil and give you all sorts of information that you may know what to do with or you may not. The mm-hmm. most important information is that your soil is not toxic. It may have levels of heavy metals like lead and others that aren't recognized as good for you. And so you would need to amend that soil or replace it.
Okay, cool. So just give a quick Google to soil sample tests and yeah. wherever you live. And I'm sure a bunch of resources will pop up on who can test it for you.
Yeah, your local cooperative extension agents. So for New York right. State, through Cornell. Mm-hmm. There's also like laboratories like IPM laboratories that go to their website. They'll have very strict instructions on what to do. And then there's either a fee or no fee, depending on what type of an analysis that you'd like.
Okay. So get your soil tested if you're doing your own land. And then if you're doing containers, you want to make sure that it's draining because no plants like wet feet. This episode is supported by Espoma Organics. Plant friends, you know I love Espoma Organics for all of my soil, fertilizing, and insect control needs. Espoma Organics is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. You know I love my Espoma potting mix, my Espoma plant food, my favorite houseplant fertilizer, and their horticultural sprays on my plants for a while now. And plant friends, springtime is here, which means that there's going to be a lot of soil-related activities, whether you're repotting your houseplants, whether you're getting your garden ready for spring, or whether you're maybe amending your garden beds that you already have set up. Espoma has products for all of these tasks. They've got specified potting soils for your containers, whether it's cactus or succulent mix, container mix, raised bed garden mixed, garden soil. They have soils and mixes for everything. They have garden and lawn fertilizers in addition to houseplant fertilizers. And they also have single ingredient soil amendments and horticultural sprays and seed starters. So plant friends, they're your go-to company for anything you need to get things growing. While I've been prepping my houseplants for spring, I've really enjoyed their cactus mix and their potting mix, and you can also buy a bag of perlite from them. So I have all three, and then depending on the plant and its needs, I'll like mix a little perlite in, or I'll mix a little cactus mix in, and I'll like make my own little mixtures. I've never really done that with plants before, but I see a lot of people I know do it, so I've been playing with it, and it's been really fun. So if you want to get mad science-y, I would suggest trying it too. And they just make fertilizing so foolproof with their easy dose liquid concentrates. You simply flip the bottle over to fill the cap, dump the cap into the water, and stir. It's that simple. And to top it all off, they're a third generation family-run company with all organic products, and they have 100% solar-powered plant and eco-friendly packaging. They're just good people making good stuff. So to learn more about their organic indoor and outdoor plant products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to the Bloom & Grow Amazon Espoma storefront, where I have my favorite Espoma products organized for you. So once again, check out Espoma.com to see all of their offerings, from potting mixes, garden mixes, fertilizers, horticultural sprays, and find your local dealer. Or you can click the link in the show notes for my Amazon Espoma storefront for my favorite picks. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled? Or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. In my balcony, I can use a gardening potting mix, right? Like, what's your suggestion for someone who's looking for like the simplest solution to like putting some containers on a balcony or a rooftop or something?
Yeah, so I would just blend it. I would maybe take a potting mix and blend it with a bag of compost.
Okay, got it.
Even some topsoil as well.
And topsoil as well. Okay, cool. Any just general guidelines for fertilizing throughout the growing season, when you should start and continue, like when, you know, do you change it when your tomato plant has fruit on it versus when it's just foliage, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we tend to use liquid fertilizer. So we look for products that are OMRI rated. It's an organic resources accreditation. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of different products out there and various different sources. The macronutrients are really what you're going to need to replace. Mm-hmm. Plants use them. So that's your nitrogen, your phosphorus, and your potassium.
NPK, baby. That's what everybody talks about in gardening class.
Exactly, NPK. Nitrogen is really good for the vegetative state. And so that would be when your plants are like making leaves, basically. Mm-hmm. And so for some of your crops, thinking like lettuce and kale or spinach, that's all you're looking for, really. Like most people grow those just for their leaves. And so just giving them a fertilizer that's heavy with nitrogen is good. And other plants in the earlier part of their life cycle, like let's say your Solanaceae family, your tomatoes, peppers, eggplants that you're looking for their fruit, giving them like a nitrogen heavy fertilizer in the early stages is recommended. And then you can switch over to ratios higher in phosphorus, potassium that promote root growth or flower and fruit set. So we typically just use like a seaweed or a fish emulsion, and it comes as in a concentrate and you dilute it. Mm-hmm. You pour like a tablespoon or so in with like a gallon of water, and then you do a foliar application. So you water your leaves. I would not necessarily recommend that for indoor setting.
Oh yeah. This would just be outdoor settings. Yeah.
Pretty strong aroma to it.
Yeah.
And then you also don't want to do it before you're harvesting. So you want to let that rinse off the leaves.
Okay. And is it like once a month you recommend or once every 2 weeks?
Yeah, if you can do it like once every couple of weeks, it would be ideal during the primary part of the growing season. If you're able to, once a month would be better than nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're starting with like a new container garden, let's say, or new raised bed with, and you have brand new compost and topsoil, it will have many of those macronutrients, micronutrients, and minerals in it. Mm-hmm. The first year might not need as much fertilizer. Plants would perform better with, you know, readily accessible nitrogen. So,
okay. All right. So let's get to the good stuff now. Let's talk about your suggestions for what we should grow. You and I had kind of discussed offline talking about some suggested spring plants and then being able to swap them out with some suggested summer plants. So the ideal would be if you have limited space and you are a beginner, so easier to grow. I don't want to say anything is easy to grow because you need to know how to grow whatever you're growing. And Everybody should go do their research after this episode inspires you to get growing. So this episode is airing April 14th. So we're mid-April. So we're just warming up. Spring is here. What would you suggest being some fun starter plants for the spring?
Yeah, this is go time for spring. And so there's a whole palette of delicious plants that can go into the ground. We're putting in our sugar snap peas, our snow peas. Those are climbing plants. So they take up a little bit of space in the actual container or the bed. And then you provide support, they'll grow up. And so then those kind of like the earliest things that we typically plant. And those are by seed. So we'll soak the seeds overnight and then plant them the next day about an inch deep or so, a couple inches apart. And then we either build a long trellis and plant a row of them, but in a container you could make a trellis, which is like a ladder for the plants to climb up with some bamboo or some sticks. And there's all sorts of, you know, trellises that they sell.
You can find everything on Amazon now too.
Yep. So you could plant several in a container and they'll make a little tower of vines basically that you can harvest in about 60 days or so. If you want to diversify it, you can add some like leafy greens on the perimeter of the container. So relatively easy to grow is lettuce. There's lots of varieties of lettuce. There's loose leaf, there's romaine, there's the head forming types.
I just found a bag. The lettuce options are wild too, because it's fun. Number one, you put the seed in the ground and you have lettuce really quickly. So it's a fun, like quick win. But also like I got a bag of seeds the other day and it's like spring lettuce mix. And it's like six different types of lettuces in this one bag that you just kind of shake over the pot. So any practices there with, do I shake it over the pot? Probably not. You're supposed to sow it more properly.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too many secrets, but that's what you do. Mm-hmm. It's not as hard as it might look. Mm-hmm. I always find myself telling folks to think about when they're in like a grocery store in the produce section or at a farmer's market. And, you know, a lot of the questions I get after like you've started is like, when do I harvest it? But to your question for the mixes, you know how you have like your bag lettuce and it's lots of little leaves and there's combinations of those and there's like a spring mix or like a kale mix and so on and so forth. So if you buy a packet of that mixture, it's like sometimes called mesclun or like literally like spring mix or like, you know, Toby's favorite. Those plants, you can broadcast those seeds and lots of them in a small space. And you basically will just come up and about an inch above the soil, you'll cut them. And then you'll have like a colander full of leaves to make a salad with. And those plants will continue to grow and they'll flush new leaves. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, in another part of the farmer's market or the produce, you'll see like a head of lettuce. Mm-hmm. And so those you would grow and you would space them about 6 inches apart, 8 to 12 inches apart. So they're about 6 inches away from each other when they grow. Mm-hmm. And so you could fill up like a 3 by 3 foot square with about 36 heads of lettuce. And so then you'd have literally like about 30 leaves on that head that you'd have to wait a little bit longer for. So you could have that kind of cut and come again is what they call that spring mix. Mm-hmm. Or you could let the whole head form and then you pull the whole plant out of the ground and that space becomes available. So there's different ways to grow the same thing, basically. So other than the sugar snap peas and snow peas that climb and lettuces, whether it's a mix or the head forming, other leafy greens like kale, Swiss chard, spinach, those are all things that we're planting.
Radishes too, right?
Yeah, and then like a root crop. So radishes can go in now. Mm-hmm. Radishes, we typically fit about 36 in a square foot. Mm-hmm. So we plant them each 2 inches apart from their neighbor and only like a quarter inch deep. And so literally in a 1 foot by 1 foot square, you can fit 36 radishes. They grow incredibly fast. So like if you're impatient, I would do the spring salad mix and some radishes, and you'll have a nice salad foundation.
Yeah, I love the idea, like you suggested, of doing something in the same pot, like a trellised snap pea and then lettuce around the bottom or with the radishes. That's a great idea. So the spring is happening, at least in New York. So I Googled, I'm 7B for my hardiness zone, but like the spring. So these are good projects for April, May, June, I would assume. And then is that when in the New York area we're switching into the summer crop?
Sort of. So we're planting the spring crops now. So through probably early May. And then those plants take time to mature, to grow. Mm-hmm. So that we can harvest those roots or harvest those leaves or harvest those sugar snap pea pods. Mm-hmm. And so between the earliest, like 30 days from the seed starting for the radishes to like 60 or 70 days for the sugar snap peas. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us into June. We're also now starting. And so if you're more interested in that summer palette of plants, you're going to start those summer seeds now.
Yeah, I'm interested in tomatoes and basil, baby. Those are, I like a pesto and a tomato in the summer.
So for us, like, and even if you're at home on a much smaller scale, like we're planting our spring crops out now. So we've been taking advantage of the nice weather and acclimating this early spring crops outdoors. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to put them in the ground. Mm-hmm. And then that opened up space indoors for us to start our warm season crops. So we're starting our tomatoes, our cherry tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, hot peppers, basils, those types of things. Even some of our bitter melons and cucumbers, the earliest of the cucumbers are starting now. Again, this is what we do, and we do it on a really large scale. If I was a home gardener, I would start some of those warm season seeds, like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, especially. Mm-hmm. And then things like basil and cucumbers, they grow much faster. And so I would wait a little bit longer for those. But typically the earliest you can plant those outside in this area is middle of May.
Okay.
Sometimes a little earlier, like early May lately.
Yeah, people say like Mother's Day, which is mid-May, right?
Right.
And also people should know, and I'm probably going to go this route this year just because I didn't get my act together, but you can buy, it's amazing if you can start from seed, but you can also buy seedlings that are already grown. And there's a lot of sites that are offering them online now too. So if you're stuck in isolation, I'm probably just going to be ordering some pre-grown seedlings to my house come mid-May and just scheduling it correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely support your local businesses. Mm-hmm. Whether it's buying the seed packets or buying the seedlings. If you're buying seedlings, they'll come in like 6 packs or 8 packs and things like that. They're oftentimes overplanted. And so it's not one plant per cell. Mm-hmm. It might be 2 or 3 tomato plants in one cell. And so back to that spacing conversation we had earlier, you want to double check that there's not more than one plant in that same space. And if there is, you want to separate them.
Okay.
And then follow the instructions of how much room to give them. And don't think about how big they look while you're planting them. Think about how big they'll look 60 or 90 days down when they'll be as tall as you with some support, like for your tomatoes, or will benefit from that extra space and not have to compete with the neighbor for nutrients or water.
Yeah. That's super helpful. So for those summers, I mean, I jumped the gun because I said tomatoes. I also feel like I've grown tomatoes and I've grown cherry tomatoes. And I feel like if you have a small amount of space, a cherry tomato, I just feel like is such a faster reward. And like they're a little bit like just I find easier to grow and easier to harvest. And you're not like waiting all summer for that like one tomato to ripen if you only have one plant. So I think we're just going to do 2 different types of cherry tomatoes this year if we can find seedlings or plantlets.
Yeah, we love the cherry tomatoes. They're fun. It's big. You know, it's a 3-acre campus here. And you know, I mentioned how many visitors we typically have. And so you're always trying to find harvest opportunities because it's a lot of the fun in gardening. And so cherry tomatoes definitely are prolific. You know, you might get one or a few giant tomatoes on a delicious heirloom variety, but you might get hundreds of cherry tomatoes. And so we grow them both. I just had a conversation with a colleague a couple of days ago about one of the tips they were reading about growing tomatoes. And I'm like, oh yeah, you've been gardening your whole life, like 40 years, and you're still reading like tips on how to grow tomatoes. But she was saying that she always is just learning something new. And one of the things that resonated with me was somebody had recommended growing some of the hybrids and the heirlooms, because hybrids are typically determinate and they produce many more fruits early. Mm-hmm. Whereas the heirlooms take a little bit longer and produce fewer feet. So you can have early tomatoes and late tomatoes.
Right. If you can have a few different types of plants, then you can space their fruiting throughout the season. That's very smart. So you said cherry tomatoes, and then you said tomatoes are in the same family as peppers and eggplants. So I would imagine that it's very similar care instructions.
Yeah. Well, for all intents and purposes, yes. Peppers, eggplants, potatoes. Mm-hmm. There's also like ground cherries and tomatillos. Peppers and eggplants aren't nearly as big and gangly as the tomatoes are. And so they're typically don't require as much space. Mm-hmm. They do all suffer from the same like diseases and then typically like use up the same quantity of nutrients. And so they all love nitrogen. And so you want to make sure to tend to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then otherwise, they all bear fruit, at least the tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, tomatillos, and ground cherries through the summer season. So as early as like middle of July through into October, even in New York.
Okay, great. So you gave us some suggestions for spring plants to get in the ground now that'll be growing into full fruit or whatever they are for the next couple of months, and then some suggestions to swap out for the summer. Two more questions for you. Any suggestions on what not to grow?
I think that kind of brings us back to our original conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you make that wish list and there's things like broccoli, for example. Love broccoli. It's very good for you. It takes up a decent amount of space and takes a long time to grow. So if you're in the position where you have to make those hard decisions, mm-hmm. I might err on the side of not growing broccoli, knowing that I can buy it at a farmer's market or the grocery store. It's not terribly expensive, but that big broccoli head takes like 75 days to mature. And so if you have just like a few containers that you're going to be waiting a while for that, and that's all you're going to get that one time. And so I might make that kind of a decision as like what not to grow, not because I don't like it, but because of like its growth habitat or growth habits. If I had very limited space, I would probably even just like a couple of windowsill boxes, for example, or even just a few containers. I might highlight herbs, culinary herbs that are very powerful smelling and tasting and with just very small quantities. And so close by the kitchen, you can just grab a pieces and use that to flavor your food. And then you have that fresh kind of aspect of it because you're really only going to be able to grow a few heads or a few things otherwise. So
herbs are the gateway drug, I think, for the edible gardening community. And we have a whole separate episode. I think it's episode 22 on herb gardening, if you're interested to go back and listen to that. But I will say there's no better feeling than waking up in the morning, going to my balcony, snipping some chives, and putting them in my scrambled eggs every day. That's our daily practice in the summer. And we make so much pesto with our basil. And yeah, herbs are definitely a great, great starter plant. So thank you so much for your time. And just to leave our listeners, why would you encourage someone who's never gardened before to try growing their own food this year?
Oh, you have to do it. It's pretty amazing to have something so tiny in your hands, a seed, and then make a hole, put it in the ground, and walk away. And the next thing you know, it's sprouted. And then soon after that, you can eat it. And so it's that kind of like act of faith that, is it really going to work this time? And you know, when we try new varieties and things that are unfamiliar to us, and it kind of brings you back to that first time that you did it for us. And we try to grow everything we can find. So that's one good reason. And then if you got a family and you want to develop your kids' like affinity for where food comes from, and you don't get to see that on a regular basis, like in a farming type of environment or something, like that's a great way to get them to like vegetables and like eating them. If they grow it, if they have that responsibility of taking care of it, they're more likely to eat it, at least try it and develop whether they actually have a palate for it or not. And so I think like that kind of extends to adults too. I know like I grew up in a city and didn't really have much space and just had more of an interest in like playing soccer and things like that. So I really didn't start growing plants until I was basically an adult. And so then once you do it, then you're kind of hooked on it. And it's great for yourself too, besides like the food that you get, to know that you can do it if you want to, but also just to be outdoors. It's good for you. Like physically, you're out moving around and kind of bending and things in different ways that are just good for your body. So it's on all fronts, it's good for you. And so
absolutely,
I encourage you to try it out. Yeah.
If you have the opportunity, especially if we're going to be social distancing and indoors more right now, there's no better excuse to be outside once a day, every day, to check on your garden. Or for me, I just go sit on my balcony and have my coffee with my herbs in the morning, and I smell them, and I leave my phone in the apartment, and it's just like a minute for myself to feel some sun on my skin, and it's really beautiful. So thank you. All of the links to the Edible Academy and what you do are going to be in the show notes, and I hope this episode inspires everyone to grow something new this year.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Toby, for that awesome conversation. He got me so inspired to start growing. After we stopped recording, I had to ask him several more questions about my garden. But he suggested I try some radishes, maybe try some peas. But yeah, I'm excited to see what I can grow. I mean, I have such a small amount of space on my balcony, but I'm trying to be more intentional this year with setting it up to get the biggest harvest. And I will share more about that with you in another episode. So plant friends, go take my plant parent personality test. It's so cute. It's so fun. And share your results on Instagram and tag me. I hope that it's a helpful resource for you. I hope that it leads you to an episode or a YouTube video or a plant that you maybe have never tried and helps you continue to bloom and grow. Thank you again to our Patreon plant friends. I love you. I'm so thankful for your support. And thank you to our two episode sponsors, Modern Sprout and Espoma, for fabulous grow lights, seed starter kits, hydroponic planters with tons of herbs and different seed varieties, and planty accessories. Check out modsprout.com and use code 15BLOOM for 15% off at checkout. Once again, that's modsprout.com and use code 15BLOOM for 15% off at checkout. And for every soil fertilizing or horticultural soap need that you might have, check out Espoma Organics. They have indoor and outdoor solutions for you. You can check out all of their offerings at espoma.com to find your local dealer, or check my Amazon link in the show notes for my favorite products. My plant friends, I hope this episode inspires you. I want to hear what you're growing. Tag me and let me know on Instagram when you set your gardens up. And until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review? I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.